Blog Talk Radio.
Can even taste it. My name is Pato Banza.
Sorry about that.
Very good.
That was
very good.
Somebody must have taken over our show there for a few seconds. I think that was a technical glitch. I think somebody was hacking into our show. So,
okay.
So I'm back. This is Andre Traversa. We fixed the problem. Thank you, everybody, for tolerating that. This is Andre Traversa here with Paula Thompson on the Cosmic Citizen. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We're going to be doing a show. A lot of the listeners who are listening. By the way, I'm sorry about this. So let's get some introductions here. Paula, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. It's
good.
Beautiful.
And I have to ask you again how the weather in Colorado is.
It's fabulous the last few days. So that's wonderful. It's May and I are going to the zoo today.
Wow. Well, you know, yeah. May is your daughter. For those who don't know, you have a beautiful daughter adopted from China. And, you know, it's kind of funny because Colorado's weather is so different from anywhere else in the country. I mean, if something's going on in one part of the country, you can't tell what's going on in Colorado. It's just so here in Chicago. Actually, in Chicago, it was pretty nice yesterday. It was sunny and probably high of 50. It wasn't too bad. So what's your high there, today?
70.
Oh my gosh, see?
Yeah, it's big.
You guys are spoiled rotten. Okay. Anyway, you can take your dry weather. That's the only thing I don't like about living out there is the dryness.
Yeah,
but,
I know, Andre. You need a humidifier to
that's
a big
right.
lake.
That's right. Anyway, for those of you who don't know, a lot of the listeners here, some of them at least, maybe readers of the Arantia book, but are not aware of the two existing fraternal organizations that exist, the two primary fraternal organizations, I should say, that exist that connect readers with one another, that host conferences, that allow people to fellowship with one another, that allow people to exchange information and educate each other about the Arantia Revelation. And today we're going to discuss those two organizations. We're going to discuss the names of those two organizations, for those who don't know, are the Arantia Association International and the Fellowship for Readers of the Arantia Book. And for the first hour, we're going to be speaking with Gaetan Charland, who's calling us from Quebec, Canada. And he is president of the Arantia Association International. And the second hour, I'm going to interview Paula, because she, for those of you who don't know, is executive director of the Fellowship for Readers of the Arantia Book. But let's go ahead and start here. Gaetan Charland, who is president of the Arantia Association International, also known as the UAI, is with us this morning. How are you, Gaetan?
I'm very well, Andre. Thank you for asking.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. So tell our listeners, what exactly is the UAI? When was it founded, and what is its purpose?
Well, UAI is a service organization mainly. It was created in 1993. By Arantia Foundation then, and it has been going through some changes since then, like In 2003, the foundation decided to create a new board of directors for Wrench Association, because at that time the board of directors were the trustee of Wrench Foundation. So in 2003 there was a mandate given out, and some people like myself and others were asked to come in as board members of the Wrench Association. And in 2006 we changed the name from International Wrench Association to Wrenchia International Association, so UAI. And like it says, we have been publishing brochure, and we have been publishing an annual report that says everything about our own association. So it's mostly a membership organization that serves all readers of the Wrenchia book. It's a non-for-profit organization for religious and charitable purposes, and it's been registered in the state of Illinois. So that's about generally what it is.
Now tell me, what was the reason for the name change?
Well, some people felt at that time, because of the internet and because, you know, people were looking for Wrenchia, they decided that the name Wrenchia, if would be put in the forefront of our name, would help people, you know, wherever they are searching for us, whether on the internet or whether on the phone books. They would have an easier time of finding us, and the reason why it was changed to Wrenchia Association International.
Now, did you get, I don't know if I should, this question may seem a little irrelevant, but I guess I'm asking out of curiosity. Didn't you have to get permission from the foundation to use the name Wrenchia? Did you have to get license to use it? Or?
Yeah, we do have a license. We've been having a license since its creation in 1993. And lately, Wrenchia Foundation has changed its licensing policy, and we were again licensed under this new licensing policy.
Okay. So what are some of the things that UAI does? What are some of the things that, if someone joins the UAI, what kind of opportunities, service opportunities can exist for someone who joins the UAI?
Well, mostly at this time, we're concerned, and not concerned as much as focus on study groups and the dissemination of the Wrenchia book and its teaching in different countries where money is a problem for some people, like in Africa, South America, or a community of readers trying to serve the purpose of the mission of the Wrenchia book, which is to create thousands of study groups and through that, through those study groups, try to use the study group, a small classroom, to really foster the emergence of teachers and leaders. And then we do have conferences where people that are, you know, good speakers or have a long-time study of the text of the Wrenchia book and its teaching can come forth and share their own knowledge through different presentation and workshop. And those conferences happen usually in... Yes, sorry.
No, it's okay. Just go ahead.
Go ahead, Andre.
I was just going to say, one of the things I really like about the UAI conferences that I've been to is the fact that they really do allow people to speak, and they encourage people to speak who maybe haven't spoken before. And you know, I think they really encourage people in other words, you don't have to wait and get a bunch of credentials to get approved before you speak. I mean, and that kind of thing. It's a pretty informal process, and I think that's really encouraging for for people, because there's not a lot of red tape or bureaucracy to go through.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And maybe one way to do this is to, in fact, foster the emergence of teachers and leaders. You know, a lot of people are out there, they know a lot of things. They might not be that, you know, those very, very good speakers, you know, but they do have something to say, and they do have a deep understanding of the Wrenchia book teaching through their own experience. And this is what exactly we want people to come forth with, you know, how they live the teaching of the Wrenchia book. And when you do share an actual experience, it's a lot easier for other people to identify themselves with that type of experience.
Well, I'm glad you talked about that. I'm glad you talked about experience, Gaetan, because, you know, when I first got into the Wrenchia movement, oh, gosh, 25 years ago when I was a teenager, I found that a lot of those study was strictly intellectual. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the book to feed your brain, but I felt like I wasn't, you know, I couldn't talk to people about their religious experience. I had a hard time talking to people about, you know, do they have a personal relationship with God? Can they share? You know, so there were certain needs that I wasn't getting met, and it felt very dry to me. And the last Urantia Association conference I was at here in Indiana, a local conference, there was a lot of sharing from out of our own experience, and it was really an opportunity to build community and to build intimacy among the readers. And people came away, you know, I think with a very enhanced sense of fellowship with one another. Tell us, are you there, Gaetan? Hello?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay. Tell us.
I was listening.
Yeah, that's fine. Tell us what, I was going to try to think of what I was going to ask you.
Have a question from the board, Andre.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
And Gaetan, just so you know, while we're having our show, there's also a live discussion board going on. Folks on the board, they're typically the regulars. They come every week and they listen and they chat on the live chat board. And the question is, what do you think was the break between the UAI and the IUA at that time in the foundation? What was the purpose? What was the actual purpose of that separation? I don't mean to insinuate anything negative there at all. I know that it was an amicable thing, but the person on the board wants clarification as to what you think that accomplished and what it was for.
You mean the separation that happened in 2003?
Yes.
Oh, it was not the separation as much as the, you know, you have to understand that IUA, which was called then, had for board of directors the Trustee of Urantia Foundation. And if we look through the document of the foundation, which is the DOT, which is the Declaration of Trust, and then whatever the revelator has said when the book was given, the foundation should not be involved with fraternal organization. But if we go back to when the UAI was created in 1993, it was created in the void of the split that happened between the Brotherhood and Urantia Foundation. And then they felt they had to create another organization to support their own activity, fraternal activity. So in 2003, I guess they wanted to go ahead with that mandate to really let that fraternal organization run by itself, like, you know, run by its own people. So in 2003, it was truly an effort on their part to give us that freedom to act, you know, within our own self, to elect our own people and to be interdependent with them. It's not that we're separated from them. On the contrary, we still enjoy a lot of benefit from being interdependent with the foundation, and we do likewise support their activity wherever we can. So it's not a separation as much.
Prior to that, it was formally attached to the foundation, but now it is not. Is that correct? Would that be correct to say?
Right.
Okay.
That's what it
is.
It's like we were a child, and then the parents were taking care of us, and then they decided at one time that we were old enough to take care of our own. So they let us go, but we still enjoy that interrelationship of children to parents.
Oh, good. Great.
That's a great analogy.
That's a great analogy,
Gaetan. Let me ask you this, Gaetan. You talk about fostering study groups, I don't mean I don't mean to insinuate anything negative by this question either. I'm just curious. The study groups are they relatively autonomous, or is there's not a lot of control by any central authority or anything about what goes on in the study group?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a good question, Andre. You know, I'm a big fan of study groups because I found out that study groups for me when I did go to my first study group, the first thing I had as an experience was as strong as having found the Urantia book. So for me, I have great respect for study groups, and I do believe that study groups are the building block on which stand this revelation and where we can really understand the value of its teaching and apply them in their own life. So If I look at UAI, what it can do with the study groups, we're not there to try to control study group. On the contrary, we're there. First of all, we do have a policy within the UAI about study groups. So for us, study groups are not a political body. So they're not part of UAI as such. There might be a lot of people that are in study groups that belong to our organization and to other organizations. But for us, study groups is not a political body in itself. It doesn't belong to us. It doesn't belong to UAI or any other organization as we are concerned. So we're apolitical, so we don't support, like we would not support study groups that want to go being political. We also don't support study groups that don't want to study exclusively the Rancho book. If people want to study different books or whatever, they want to study the Bible or the Course of Miracles, we have no problem with that, but we won't reference them as study groups or the Rancho book. And also, we don't support study group activity, spiritism activity like channeling or things like that. So we're truly focused on study groups that are closely related to the study of the teaching of the Rancho book
Let's say that somebody, let's say you talked about studying the Bible or the Course. What if somebody, for example, wanted to do one of the things I wanted to do, I'm not in a position to do it right now, but I've always wanted to start a study group for people, a Urantia study group for people from Christian backgrounds. And I wanted to, and the group would be a study, it would integrate the study of the Bible with the Urantia book, because the Urantia book quotes the Bible more than any other book. And I'd like to start a group where people can see how the Urantia book corrects certain biblical texts and how they use certain biblical texts. You wouldn't reference a group like that on your site, for example?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if people want to go and study the Bible, that's fair enough with them. But what you're saying at this time is making comparison with the Bible, like different texts.
I do understand this.
And I do believe this has a lot of value, and we would, I believe, reference this kind of study group, because you do use the Urantia book as a comparison to other texts, but you're not exclusively. That's what we have to understand. We've seen people coming into study groups, and then they didn't want to read the Urantia book anymore. They want to study something else,
or they said they
were studying the Urantia book. But I understand what you're saying. It has great value, and I wish that a lot of people would do the same thing with different religion. They would compare other religion with what the Rancho book are saying to try to gain greater knowledge about other religion across the world.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things we do
on
our
show. And this would make.
One of the things we do on our show is we try to. we have a lot of time. We have a lot of guests on the show that are not readers of the Rancho book. We call it outside the box guests, and we give them an opportunity. We give these guests an opportunity to. We talk to them about the Rancho book, and we talk to them about how what they're doing, they might be on the cutting edge of some spiritual theme or idea, and we talk about how that relates to the Urantia book, and we give them an opportunity. I totally understand what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense. So what else? Go ahead.
If I can say this, Andre, even Jesus was using texts from the old text from the Jewish books. And I believe we can do the same. If it's there to enhance the perception of truth in any people, then we do have a great goal and it has great value.
Yeah, I agree. So study groups and conferences, you guys promote those and foster those. You also have different committees in the UAI, like, for example, one that interests me a lot is the Education Committee. Can you talk about some of the committees that you have in the UAI and what they do?
Mm-hmm. Well, we did create, I think it was around 2004, we did create a study group committee, which was part before the educational committee. And every committee has his own task. And because UAI is so new, 1993 for international organization is not very old. And we're still in the process of growing because we're expanding all the time. And, as well as I am, to find volunteers is not an easy task. A lot of people want to belong to something, but then to become very active, that's something quite different. But in our different committee, like education, it's closely related. If we look at what the mission is about. Train leaders and teachers and create thousands of study groups. When we look at education, it's closely related to what is happening within study groups or within conferences. Like what we're trying to do in education is try to gather material that will help the experience within study groups. We do believe that if we supply study groups with the material needed to enhance the perceptions of the teaching of the Rancho book or study different topics that are relevant to the perception of truth, we will have made study group a better place for anyone to attend. Now, we're not trying to control what they will study, but what we want to do is to provide them with program that if they're willing to, you know, they could adopt within their own study group and
exercise. Sort of like guidelines.
Right. And why I'm thinking like this is because where I come from in Quebec, we've been having great success with study groups. And in the past years, we've done some experimenting with study groups. You know, nothing wrong with that. On the contrary, we've discovered many things. Like we would use study group to create a one-day conference, like people within the study group would work together for 2 months on the topic, and then they would research the Rancho book, and then they would work on, you know, four or five people would work on building up a presentation, and then one day all those people would come together, we would invite all kinds of readers from around the area, and then we would have a one-day conference with workshop. And this was a great, great experience, and we found out that when people work on topics like this, to build something to share with others based on their own factual experience, it creates a momentum and it creates a really kind of enthusiasm on the part of the one that share and the part of the one that attend those mini conference with workshop. So this is where we're planning to go within UAI. About study group and educational committee. We're trying to find ways to implement within study groups different ways for people to enjoy more their experience and to train themselves as better teachers. But I don't mean teachers like we see at school. You know, teacher by example. This is what I mean. Mm-hmm. You know. And, of course, there's a lot of work to be done because usually when people look at education, we look at the old pattern of education, you know, what's going on in school. And most of the time we're trying to replicate what's been happening there, but I believe it's not exactly how it will work. You know, like the Rancho book tell us that in the higher world, on some worlds, when we learn something, we have to teach it in order to, you know, to pass a level. And I believe it's the same with the Rancho book. We learn and we teach, then we can learn higher value.
Absolutely, absolutely. What kind of services do you? What do you have on your website? Well, first of all, what is your? We didn't even mention your website for people, but what kind of online stuff do you have going on for people who use the internet a lot? Do you have any kind of teaching materials for people who use the internet?
Well, we do have our website, and we do have what we do, we encourage a lot of our local association to build up their own website and to supply material to people. So if you go on the UAI website, you will have reference to other local association or local or national association across the world. And on their website, they will have all kinds of material for studying purposes. And, of course, being a young organization, we're still scrounging around, we're still building up our, you know, knowledge base. We do have forum in different languages. We do have discussion lists in different languages. We don't host all those different languages, but we have a goal to try to create a space, a server space, where every local or national association within UEI will be able to have this space. Because we'll provide for them, knowing that a lot of those people don't have the money most of the time to develop their own website or to provide for their own domain name or server, IUA want to provide for them. So we're working on also on the creation of an intranet service where we will probably gather all this different material where people will have access to it. And supply all kinds of religious material also, not only Rancho book material, but all kinds of material that help people understand the great religion of the world. So this is mostly what we're doing at this time.
Hey, Gaetan, we have a question from the board. Somebody, Gerald on the board, would like to know, why do you think that the Urantia book has had such a good acceptance in the province of Quebec?
Well, that's a very good question, Paula. I've been asking myself the same thing, and maybe it's because of our cultural background. And we do maybe share with the South American this cultural background. First of all, we're a Latin country, we're French, and we have been, by our language, by our culture, maybe a little bit, not separated, but a little bit protected from the rest of the world, from the English world. So we're like seclusive. And in the old days in Quebec, the Catholic religion was very strong, so we have a very strong religious background related to the Catholic religion. And people in Quebec have been fostering, their own cultures for many, many years, and they do enjoy reading a lot. So in Quebec, for example, we do have 8 different book shows a year, and all those book shows happen in the largest city of our own province, because in Canada, Canada is separated in different provinces, and Quebec is one of them. So in Quebec, we do have different book shows, and that promotes reading. So there's a lot of things that's happening about reading. So there's a lot of people out there looking to read all kinds of things. And because of this religious background, and because the Catholic religion in the later days, you know what's happening with those big religions, a lot of people are coming out of those religions and shying away from them, and they're trying to find new ways to enhance their spiritual life. And I do believe that this makes a difference, why we do enjoy this growth. You know, per capita, like in Quebec, we do have 8 million people in Quebec. And at this time, we have referenced on our website 13 different study groups. And I know there are more than this. I know there are study groups out there that we heard about. And, you know, we don't have a regular contact with them, and till they manifest the desire to be referenced, we won't bother them. They're free to do whatever they want, but we know there's more study group out there. And in Quebec, I would say from 8 million people, there might been thousands of readers already. And you know that the Urantia book in French was the first translation. It happened in 1966, around there, and the book was brought in Quebec around those years. So we've been at it for quite many years, just the same as you were in the United States since 1955. So that might be why.
That's really interesting. You know, I was going to say, Gaetan, maybe one reason that there's so much acceptance in Quebec, maybe because it's so cold up there that people have nothing else to do but read. Over 13 study groups. You know, that's, believe it or not, that's actually bigger than Chicago. And I think a lot of people have this idea that, you know, everything's happening and hopping in Chicago because that's where the revelation started. But actually, I mean, things are nice in Chicago, but we don't have anything close to 13 study groups here. And we have about the same population as Quebec. We have a population of about 8 million people over the metro area. So I have to say I'm pretty impressed by what you're telling us here.
And you know what, Andre, those study groups are not all in Montreal, where it's the biggest city in Quebec. They're all over the province, so we have great distance to travel. I remember in my first years that I've been to a study group, so I used to travel at least nearly 50 miles a day to go to my first study groups and back and forth. And there are people that travel for an hour before they get to that study groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
That must be challenging, because you probably get a lot of snow in the winter.
We do. And you know what? Also, is that in the summer, because we have a short summer in Quebec, so we're like the bees. When the summer starts, you know, we're all outside. So usually in the summertime, a lot of people will their study group will stop for the period of the summer. So for 2 months there, because we do have conference, people travel a lot. So most of the time in the summer, a lot of those study groups will be on hold, and then they all start back around September. And the majority of them are happening every week.
Do you have anything? And we're kind of switching topics here because we're not really talking about the UAI so much as we're talking study groups. But do you in Quebec, for example, do you have anything going on in the summertime, though, with Jesus' birthday celebration or other kind of social gatherings for readers in the summer?
Yeah, we do have, like all the rest of the readers, I believe. Jesus' birthday is quite an happening across the world at this time. And even throughout UAI, we do have, through our own publication, Tidings, we do have people that share their own experience about the birth of Jesus on the 21st. And we've been having picnic parties for, I can't remember for how long. I believe since we had our first local association in Quebec, we've been having Michael's birthday. And also in the summertime, we do enjoy conferences. In Quebec, like, for example, we have at least three one-day conferences a year. And we tried that every third year we would have a major conference that would last for at least 3-4 days.
Hmm. Wow. So what's going on? You mentioned South America. I've heard that the Rancho book is pretty active, that there's actually a lot of readers in Latin America. Both in Central and South America and in Mexico, and is it a pretty dynamic? I've heard it's quite dynamic out there.
Well, I would say that in South America, one country that it's leading the pack is Colombia, and it is, and they enjoy similarly what we do have in Quebec as a culture, but mostly I would say the reason why it is so successful is that the people that started building that organization. I know that there are people out there that before any organization existed, with a few books they had in their own hands, they went around and created all those other study groups. And from those study groups, some people came out and wanted to create different organization, different association. So at this time in Colombia, there's about 150 regular members of UAI, separated in 4 different local associations. And they do enjoy a lot of study groups. I would say just in the city of Bogota, I was told, I haven't seen that, I was told there was as many as 15, 20 study groups.
Wow.
And not all of them are references, but this is what I was told. And while I was down there a few years ago, I've been to Colombia 3 times and to enjoy one of their conferences. And I've been around meeting all those local associations. And what I've seen from those conferences they made, they're pretty great. You know, they're really moving ahead. You know, they're quite a young organization, but they're moving strongly ahead, and they're expanding because there's a lot of interest. And another thing that's important about the South American, mostly the people that buy the book or found the books are well-educated people because, you know, the difference between rich and poor, you know, sometimes has an effect on their own education. And mostly the people that would be interested in the Rancho books are people with a good education. And the one that I found, what I found in Colombia, a lot of the readers are professional. They're doctors, they're psychiatrists, psychologists, teachers, administrators, they have business. There's even a city in Colombia. It's San Jose de Caldera. It's on the mountaintop where they have, where they grow coffee. And they had a conference there about 3 years ago, I would say. And the whole village knew about the Rancho book. The whole village, there was about 3,000 people there. They all knew about the Rancho book. I mean, they're not all reading it, but they all knew about it because the people that involved in the movement there, the mayor was a reader of the Rancho book, and the doctor was a few doctors were members of the association. And they helped the community there, you know, organize themselves, and they helped the young people, you know, build a swimming pool, build a center for conference and all this. So they are involved in social activities in their own area.
Yeah, somebody told me actually that in South America that they don't just do study groups, that they actually have service organizations. They do all kinds
uh-huh.
of things.
Yes, they do.
So it's... I'm really curious to go out there sometime and see what that's like. I bet it's quite an experience.
You could join me next year, Andre. I will be going to South America on a trip for about over a month trip to meet all those people. I'm going to be traveling to about 6 different countries to meet readers down there and to try to interest them to coming to Chicago, because UEI is planning a leadership conference in 2011 where we want to invite every readers that are interested in leadership skill, improving their leadership skill. But we're trying mostly to create that community of readers to serve the population. What we're looking at mostly is that UEI is not an organization that should live to support its own self, but mostly turns toward the people. You know, we're supposed to be a community of service, of serving to others. So we're trying to improve on that that aspect of who we are. So we want to interest people in becoming more servant to others than to try to serve the organization itself.
Mm. Hey, we have a comment on the board and also a caller. And the comment and quote-unquote question, I should say, is mm-hmm. that the person on the board feels like a lot of the success in South America and Colombia was due directly to the publishing of J.J. Benitez's book,
mm-hmm.
which we know were taken directly from the Urantia book, but they became huge national bestsellers in the Spanish
mm-hmm.
language. And many feel like that tilled the soil for the reception, for the later reception of the Urantia teachings, and mainly because Benitez admitted at one point that he did take a lot of that information from
mm-hmm.
the Urantia book. So I just, somebody on the board just wanted me to make that point. And then we have a caller, so hold on.
Okay.
Caller, you are on Blog Talk the Cosmic Citizen. Hello? Can you hear us?
No.
Wait, yes. You know what? I'm wondering if, do we, is that a person on Skype? Or is that, because are they, what's the area code?
It is a person, because it's another 1111111
oh boy.
Number. So.
Yeah, sometimes Skype doesn't work well.
Okay, here's another one. Hold on. Kevin, you are on Blog Talk, the Cosmic Citizen. Hello? Kevin?
Mm.
Area code 407? Oh, they hung up. Okay. All right.
Paulette, to expand on what you were saying about J.J. Benitez, it's true. When I did go down to South America, a lot of people talked to me about J.J. Benitez. And having found the Urantia book through reading those books that were written by him. And you know what? When I said we share a similar experience in Quebec, there's a book that was published many years ago. It was called The Life of the Masters.
Mm.
And it was translated in French. And in that book, you know, the guy that translated that book was the same one that translated the Urantia book. And at the end of the book, The Life of the Master, he said, if you want to know more about something similar, you should read the Urantia book. So a lot of people that have read The Life of the Masters were attracted to Urantia book by what the translator had said at the end of the book.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Now, Gaetan, was that Jacques Weiss?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
It was.
Paula, did our callers try to, did our caller come back in? Or?
Well, we still have a, hold on, I can try again. We still have that Skype caller. Hello, are you a Skype caller? Can you hear us? Hello? Yeah, I'm not sure what that is, Andre, so I'm just going to
And I know you said you had a 407 caller. I don't know if they're...
But they hung up. You heard the background noise when I answered. You could hear it.
Yeah.
And then they hung up.
That's Orlando, Florida. I know. So, Orlando, if you guys are trying to call in, please feel free to do so. I know we're kind of going off topic a little bit because we're talking about study groups. But you got me so interested in these study groups you're talking about, Gaetan, that this is. And I know that's one of the primary missions of your organization. One thing I've liked about the UAI, and I try to stay as unaffiliated as possible here. One thing I like too is how willing people are to help. One of the guys that I think is executive director now is Rick Lyon, and he's been so helpful to me. I mean, I just, you know, whether it's, you know, needing a ride to a conference or putting the word out about our show or whatever. I mean, I've just seen such a willingness to help. I just want to commend you guys for having people involved that are just so willing to serve.
Mm-hmm. But Andre, what we did in UEI in a later year, I mean, since the foundation has given us our ticket to grow, you know, like, okay, you guys are ready to go. We started working on a plan to improve our relationship with people out there and try to help them out finding good study groups. And we did create a database, a universal database. In fact, that was created by the reader in Colombia, a good reader there that knew about internet. And this person helped us out to create a universal database, which is available to all our organization across the world. And through this database, we do have reference of study group, like people that attend study group, people who want to attend study group, and people that have study groups or what kind of study groups they have. So whenever we have a person in any country or in any city that wants to participate in a study group, we do have a database to reference all those study groups. So that's a great help. And Rick is using that very wisely and very effectively. So he's a very good guy, very well dedicated, and he does a lot of work because we do believe at the ISB, which is the International Service Board, we do believe in the value of study groups, all of us. So we're strongly motivated to help in any way we can, any readers, to find study group or start their own study groups. Whether they are from UAI or any other organization, we don't care. Study group for us are not a political thing. They're something that needs to be fostered.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the difference of the you know, this is something that always kind of interests me in the you know, the midwayers warn us against sectarianism and dividing into sects and mm-hmm. over ideology and that kind of thing. And we take great care to protect study groups from that. I absolutely agree with you, Gaetan. But what do you think? Why do you think we, as believers in this great revelation that tells us to treat each other like family? And I understand that everybody has a different concept of what that means, to treat somebody like family. But why do you think we tend to fall into the same trap of getting into sectarian rivalry?
Good question. I guess it's because people, when they're part of an organization, they tend to focus mainly on this organization. They tend to foster the organization for the sake of the organization. They forget about the greater mission. And when people forget about the greater mission, they get centered on the secular aspect of their own organization. And I believe this is something each one of us has to work with through. Even myself, you know, when I look at UAI, I keep have to remind myself that this is not about UAI. This is about the mission of the Rancho Book and the mission to this world to improve men's, you know, well-being and spiritual enlightenment. And most of the time, I believe when we fall in the trap of living for the organization itself, then, you know, we're out of focus to what really we should be doing.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's a big trap. I think they try to point it out to us in several places, and I think they do that for a reason.
Right. And you know, Paula, you know as well as myself that, you know, when you do have, you're within a big organization, even if you have a willingness to try to steer the organization in a direction, there are always people there that are, you know, very resistant because they might not see things the way we do see things, and they might want they feel maybe more secure within an organization that promotes its own self, you know, like it's kind of a nationalism thing, which the Rancho Book talks a lot about, you know.
Well, and you know that from a pluralistic, I mean, obviously we're living in a big world, and Jesus, again, in one of my favorite discourses, the second discourse on religion, he tells us that, you know, we will never all see alike. That's just not possible. It's not possible, mm-hmm. and that we can mm-hmm. have spirit unity without uniformity. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we crave uniformity. I think this idea that we can all be the same and have the same direction or the same ideology is you know, I don't know. I don't know why we think we can do that, because we mm-hmm. can't. And I think it's perfectly fine to be pluralistic and to have different organizations that work for different purposes and have a different thrust, mm-hmm. whether it be outreach or, like you were saying, the UAI is dedicated to study groups and scholarly education, that kind of thing. And I think there might be another group developed that is dedicated to something else completely, like maybe worship with the teacher. You know, so I find it interesting that we get all tangled up in our ideology sometimes.
And I do, but right in UEI, we some of us, I believe, rely also on what the Revelator had said at the beginning. You know, not that we hold to the letter of whatever those directives were, but we do take a lot of wisdom from those directives that were left to us by the Revelator. So this is why we're mostly focused on study groups. And like I say, you know, every big organization has its own growth problem, and sometimes there's a little bit, little things that go offset, but generally we're steering in the right direction.
Yeah, I think we do remarkably well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing on time here, Paula?
We've got 14 minutes, Andre, before the end of the first hour.
Okay.
Maybe, Andre, what I would like to say to people, because this is about UEI, is that you asked me about what is UEI. In fact, we are an international organization. We do have organization in many different countries, and we do have readers in a lot more different countries because we're reference reader in our database. So we do have roughly 55 different associations across the world. Some of those are national associations, which are 10 of them. So a national association represents 10 different countries. So this is how we are structured. And we do have 33 local associations within, which are not part of those national associations, and 11 local associations that are part of national association. But they are also in the United States, at least, I think, 25 local associations that are part of the national association.
This is confusing me. You're saying, make sure I understand correctly. You said something that, and I don't know if you meant to say this, you said the national associations represent 10 different countries?
Yeah, we do have 10 different national associations.
Oh, okay. So I thought you meant one association represented 10 different. Okay.
No.
Okay, so you
we do have 10 different national associations.
Okay, so that
to
represents
become a, right.
So that and so one for each one for each country is what you're saying.
Yeah, different country, and we do have local association in countries where they are not yet a national association.
Okay. So are there other, can you be a local association and choose not to be part of the national association? Can you remain?
Well, usually, if you are affiliated with UEI and you are in a country where there is no other UEI association, but you are associated with UEI as a local association, when you get to a number of 30 regular members, you become automatically a national association.
Oh, okay, I see.
Okay. But within a country like United States, for example, there is a national association, which is UAUS, but within that national association, they are local associations, so they are at least 25 local associations.
Right.
And this is a structure that was mostly based on trying to get people to be autonomous within their own country.
Sure.
So it's quite a challenge, in fact, but
now,
it's moving it.
Do you... How is your membership growing?
Yes, it is. We're since 2003, we have grown from about 1,300 members to mostly 1,700 members so far, and we have charter many new associations. We charter at least 2 to 3 new associations every year.
Wow, that's
and
a good record.
And not only do we reference members, we reference also unaffiliated readers because they might be willing to participate in study groups. So as we move ahead, you know, anyone that wants to be included in our database, they're free to give their name and address. And whenever we have someone that wants to contact them, then we do have their name and address.
Now, I got to ask you another question about study groups because I don't mean to keep getting off topic, but you've got me so interested in the study group thing Hello?
Hello, Andre.
Are you there, Paula?
Yeah, I lost audio
okay.
here.
Okay.
I guess we got cut off.
I don't know if you heard what I just asked you, Gaetan. I know we're trying to, I don't want to keep getting off topic here, but you got me so interested in the study groups, Gaetan, that I want to ask you, you know, and I mentioned to you that when I first got involved in the Arantia movement when I was a teenager, the study groups tended to be a little dry, and I was wondering, do you find that as you travel around and visit different study groups all over the world, do you find that are there more of them that are incorporating things like group worship and prayer and maybe even music into what they're doing? That's not just an intellectual study of the book. Hello,
Andre, I'm here.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if we're.
We just lost Gaetan. You know, as wonderful as Skype is, it has its problems.
Yeah.
And it does allow people to call in, you know, but it does have problems here. Maybe, I don't know if this is Gaetan or not. Hello?
Yeah, it's me.
Hi.
Okay, let me ask this question one more time. I know our listeners are probably tired of me asking the question over and over again, but are you there, Gaetan?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what I said was, I know that we're trying to stay focused on UAI, but you've gotten me so interested in these study groups that I have to ask you one other question about the study groups. I mentioned to you that when I first got involved in the Arantia movement as a teenager, a lot of the study groups were a little dry. And I was going to ask you, do you see, as you travel and visit different study groups all over the world, do you see more and more study groups incorporating things like worship and prayer and group worship and maybe even music into what they're doing, so it's not just an intellectual exercise?
I did see this, and I did see also study groups that were getting stale, if you don't mind the word, because people were not were caught up in a routine kind of study groups, you know,
right.
Like too much intellectual. Like, you know, I've seen groups where people would just argue about the meaning of a word, you know, and have their dictionary out as soon as a different word was coming out, you know, and it made for a very dry study groups. But I've seen also that there are people out there that went through that process and they just transcend that process and started integrating into their study groups the sharing of actual spiritual experience, sharing of worship. You know, they would worship at the beginning of a study group, like we do on my own study group. I do have two study groups, and we always take 2-3 minutes before the study group where we would do some worship experience. Then we would share some spiritual experience. And I've seen that elsewhere. But I also seen some study group where they don't want to do this kind of practice because they're scared of it. You know, there's still some people that are scared about the spiritual aspect of study groups or a spiritual aspect of the Arantia book, you know. And to me, that's something very not very coherent with what we're trying to learn, you know. If we're going to be changing our life and the life of others, and first our own, we need to approach the Arantia book through a spiritual way, you know, through a spiritual desire instead of just an intellectual aspect.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I do understand, and I did write, you know, in the years that I've been having a study group, I did experiment on different methods, and I found a method where, you know, we respect whatever the other is saying, and when we do start the study group, everyone is invited to really meditate on what they're reading. So they would read 1 or 2 paragraphs, and nobody would talk during that time except that person would read those 2 paragraphs, and then they would go within their own self trying to find what's the real true meaning of this, you know, what's the spiritual meaning of what I'm reading. And once they feel that meaning, they can capture that meaning if they can, and then they would share it. And then other people would not criticize that whatever was said, but would build on it, would go inside of them and try to see what they would feel. And that made for quite a very powerful experience.
Yeah, wow, that's wonderful. How are we doing on time here, Paula?
Well, we got 6 minutes.
Okay. I want to make sure that the last few minutes here that we give people contact information if they want to get involved with the Arantia Association International.
And we have a question on the board for Gaetan, so as soon as...
Okay, well, go ahead and shoot for the question. Let's go for the question first.
Okay, the question, Gaetan, is why are people afraid of the spiritual aspects of the UB in some organizations?
Well, if we think... I want to... make specific name of country, but I know that in some country, anything that was connected with religion was bad. Like in Europe, for example, there's been a lot of thing about sectarian, you know, about sect and things like this. So people, you know, kind of went underground, and it kind of attracted those people that were mostly intellectual. And I guess the fear of spiritualism is the fear of change, the fear of being caught up in something, you know, that they don't know about. You know, like a lot of people, as soon as you talk to them about spirituality, some picture that might come in their mind is that, oh, is this a new religion? Is this a sect? And for countries where there have been maybe in the past century been probably burned or harassed by the organized religion, there's this fear of being caught up again in something similar. And with all those things about cult that's been happening, you know, around and people suiciding themselves and things like that, there's fears. There's a lot of fears going around. But why a Rancho book reader would be fearful of spirituality? Well, that's a question I'm still researching.
Well, I think I have my own thing. I think a lot of people are afraid to expose themselves. You know, they're afraid to be vulnerable. They're afraid to share their hearts. They're afraid of being rejected. But I think also some people don't want it. Like you, I think you said, people are afraid of change. It's one thing. You know, the Rancho book says that thinking men and women are right. They're afraid that the religion of Jesus is afraid of what it will do to them. You know, mm-hmm. They're afraid it will change them and make turn them into a different person. And they don't want to change. I speak for myself too, because I mean, there's a part of me, there's a part of all of us, I think, that are afraid of that. But I think the thing that's so great about God the Father is He's so gentle with us. He doesn't push us into things before we're ready for them. So,
you know, and Andre, someone on the board made a comment that they've been in situations where they felt they were expected to have a spiritual experience from things that work for other people, and it didn't work for them.
Well,
and
that's another part. Yeah.
And it made them
feel
inadequate. And I think that's you know, there's a fine line there. We have to be careful that we can have spiritual experiences. What works for one person doesn't work for someone else. Some
Absolutely.
People get really jazzed in a group worship, and other people feel really uncomfortable in that situation. I think that's a basic difference between extroverts and introverts, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree. But I also don't think that should make us afraid to do group worship. I just don't think we need to coerce people into it or force people into it.
Right.
But Ketan, I want to make sure we give out contact information, because we're about ready to get to call it a day here with this segment. So tell us how people, if they want to get involved with the UAI, or if they want to find out more, what's your website, and what should they do?
Well, the first thing, if they can go on the website, which is Urantia /a line. Like, I don't know what you call it in English, uai.org, and then they'll get on our website. And all the information is there about who to contact, and they can also contact Rick Lyon. And if I could give Rick's phone number there, probably for some people that don't have access to the Internet, just saying, I'll put that up.
You know, I actually have his phone number memorized. I'm not sure we should give it out on the air or not. Is that something that we should?
Phone number? Well, whatever. You want to give it out or no?
Well, I don't mind doing it. I don't know. I mean, I just wonder. Do you think he would mind?
No, but we do have a phone number for the UAI office.
Okay, why don't you give that to for readers? Do you have that handy?
It's 773, which is the area code.
Mm-hmm.
572-1180.
Okay.
And then the rest, like I say, they can go on the Internet and look up Urantia /uai.org. And it's not a slash. It's like, you know, that little line that separates two words. What do you call
it? Like a dash or a hyphen?
Right.
Okay.
uai.org. And
okay.
Then,
so I'll make sure we get I want to make sure we get that phone number out again. It's 773-572-1180. So
right.
As just a closing word, what would you say to people who, you know, are thinking, you know, they want to get more involved? If you were to give an inspiring word, what is a good motivation for people? Why should people consider getting involved with the UAI?
Well, if you want to be part of a community, you want to be of service to others, that's a place to be. But if you don't want to be active, stay home and, you know, just be a part of the study groups. But you should at least, you know, I believe that it's not about UAI, but people should at least, if they believe in this revelation, at least be part of the study groups. This is what I would say to them. And then within that study group, if they feel the call of service, they want to participate in being in a group of people, then they can choose to become UAI member. But first, they should at least have the experience of a good study group.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Gaetan, well, thank you so much for being on with us. I really appreciate it. And hear your heart and your desire for service. And it's quite obvious in everything you've been saying. So thanks so much for being with us on the show. And I'm glad we had the opportunity to plug your organization.
Right. Thank you very much, Andre, for this opportunity. And thank you, Paula, also for being there. It was a great experience. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dave.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
That was Gaetan Charlon, who is president of the Urantia Association International. And after we take a break, we're going to I'm going to interview Paula about the fellowship for readers of the Urantia. But before that, we have a little announcement that we want to play not a sponsor, but we have a little segment that we want to play for you, and we'll be back after this.
When my grandmother was alive, my mom actually had in-home care for my grandma for about 6 years during the end of her life. But for part of that time, my grandma was in and out of nursing homes as well. Okay, and my mom said that that Medicare was, you know, covered her nursing home care, and that it was actually, she had to pay out of pocket for the in-home care, but she said that Medicare covered the nursing home care completely. That's what she claimed, at least.
They will cover most of the costs for the first 100 days. After that, you're more or less on your own. Now, it may have been that they had what is colloquially called now Medigap insurance.
Hear me?
Or perhaps not. There are some variations that would alter how things go. For example, if one is frequently readmitted to a nursing home, each new admission, if you will, starts the clock again. So there are quite a number of contingencies that affect things. But the bottom line, if one is in long-term care for an extended period of time, after 100 days, you really are on your own and beginning to spend down life savings.
Okay, that didn't make a lot of sense to people. What we were doing there was we were promoting, one of our guests a few weeks ago was Robert Bornstein and Mary Langerand, who wrote a book that we promoted, we talked about, called Healthy Dependency. But they also wrote a book recently they wanted us to help promote, called When Someone You Love Needs Nursing Home Care. And that was just a part of a little brief interview segment I did with Mr. Bornstein about that book. So if anyone's interested in that book, maybe you have a loved one that needs nursing home care or in-home care or assisted living, go ahead and please feel free to get a copy of that book. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it probably at your local bookstore. Again, it's called When Someone You Love Needs Nursing Home Care, published by New Market Press. So I just wanted to give those guests an opportunity to plug their book. We'll be playing that again.
You know what, Andre? That for some reason, those interviews don't sound very good, and some people on the board are reiterating that. And maybe we can enlist Mark to help us in the future on getting some good sound for something like that. So.
Oh, that you're saying that you're saying that it sounded good?
No, it didn't. It sounded like he was in a tin can.
Well, that's because we had some problems with the I did that in the recording studio. We had to do a little bit of editing and revising because the connection there was not quite as good as.
Yeah, we should have given some context up front too, because it didn't. It kind of came in from the blue.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize. I didn't realize it was going to happen that way. We had three segments, and it was kind of a. Well, anyway, I don't want to. That's just what happened. I didn't know it was going to happen that way. So I didn't.
Live radio, folks, as Andre.
Yes, exactly, folks. So, okay. Well, let's go on to our next part of our show, where I will be Paula will be speaking in her in an official capacity here as executive director of the Fellowship for Readers of the Urantia Book. That's something that she doesn't usually discuss on the air because we like to remain unaffiliated on the show, and we like to let people know. We like to kind of stay away from some of these some of this political stuff, but we want to give an opportunity for people to know about the organizations that are out there and what's out there. So, Paula, what got you involved in the, and I should have asked Gaetan this too, why he decided to run for president of UAI, and I completely forgot to do that, but what got you interested? I mean, I'm assuming you were asked to become executive director, and why did you agree to take that on?
Oh, it's a long history, Andre. I joined the fellowship in 1982. And back
that was when it was still the Brotherhood, right?
Yeah, it was the Urantia Brotherhood. And it was kind of exciting to be in the movement back in those days because there was a sense of hope and anticipation that was, just really tangible among Urantia book readers. And there was a lot of idealism still. And it was exciting. I remember when my good friends, and it was nothing to be taken lightly. I remember that too. My good friends Joanne and Linda came to me and they said, "We're inviting you to join the Rocky Mountain Urantia Society of Denver." And we really think you'd be a good candidate for that. I'd been attending study group regularly for about 4 years at that point. And they knew me pretty well. I had just lost my husband. I had a little girl who was 7, a little boy who was 4. I was trying to cope with everything, being a single parent, kind of thrust into single parenthood because my first husband was killed in a car accident. And so, but I was really looking forward and moving on, and they thought the time was right, and they asked me. And I got up in front of the group and took a very solemn oath, which I'm the kind of person that whenever I take an oath, it is a very solemn thing for me. It's like a vow. I don't say those things if I don't mean it and if I don't intend to live up to it. And so that's where it began back in 1982. I was inducted with my good friend Don Green, and we were made to hold hands, and then it was really adorable. It's something I'll never forget. And I started to serve the organization, and the main reason that I did was because I felt it was the best way to serve the revelation. And where it is for me, Andre, and where it always has been, is this book pulled me back from a precipice of despair. And Jesus at one point said, don't strive with unbelievers, but don't hesitate to stand in vigorous defense of the truth that has saved and sanctified you. And the Urantia book saved and sanctified me. Just no doubt in my mind. None.
Wow.
It made such a difference in my life in every way, in every way. I hold it next to my children. Being a parent, I hold it next to being a parent for being a life-altering experience. I wouldn't trade either experience ever, not for anything, not for anything. They are paramount to the person that I am. It has made life better for me in every single way. I can't even name one way that the Urantia book hasn't made life better for me. And I burn with a desire for others to find that. I mean, how can you not? You know, there's an old saying that misery loves company. And that's true, I think. I think experientially that's true. But it is also true then, equally true, that joy craves fellowship. And if something makes you happy, something makes a difference to you, the good part of humanity, the joyful, altruistic part of humanity craves to share that with others. Has to. The minute you see a good movie, read a good book, look at the internet, it's perfect. These little things that proliferate on the internet, these little inspirational videos and clips that get proliferated, they go viral. They've even made up a term for it, viral. Because why? Because they make you smile, or they make you cry, or they make you think. They give you an insight. That's why. Whether you take that in the Urantia book times a million over many years, every day, endless inspiration, endless spiritual joy, satisfaction, tears of bliss running down your face at words of truth so profound, so beautiful, so good. I felt like if I joined this organization of believers, fellow believers, well, first of all, Andre, I was 20 years old when I found it, 22. I'd been reading it for 2 years. It took me 3 years to read it the first time. I said, I've got to find somebody else that reads this thing. Oh, please, God, don't let me be the only person on earth that reads this. I can't be the only person on earth that has found this great treasure. I just know it. So I wrote to Urantia Foundation. I said, I have to find other readers. I have to talk to somebody about this. And they sent me back the names. Well, that is an anomaly in itself. Think about that. How many books do you have on your shelf right now, listeners out there? How many books do you have on your shelf where you ever said to yourself, I think I'm going to write the publisher and find out who else reads this thing? That in itself is kind of strange. But that's what I did, and that's what countless other individuals did, and that's how we found each other. We found each other by writing to the publisher because we didn't know what else to do. And the publisher took it upon itself, God bless them, to hold those names in sacred trust and send that information out to each other and say, oh, yeah, they wrote me back right away. Emma Christensen wrote me. She said, Paula, you'll be pleased to know that there are two readers, study reader groups in your area that you could join in. Well, they were 25 miles away from me, but believe me, I was very pleased to know that. And I started talking to those other readers, and I've been talking to them ever since. Mm. I haven't stopped talking to them. They feed me, just like the book. Those other readers, and this is what Gaetan was touching on, those other readers feed me. Their understanding is different than mine. I have friends who have, you know, we've had our good guest, wonderful guest, Chris Halverson, a PhD in science. We've had him on our show. He's amazing. I don't think like a scientist. I'm definitely more spiritual, philosophical, and he's more scientific. So we have some wonderful conversations you can imagine. The Urantia book ignites a million amazing conversations. It's just the most brilliant piece of work, and I have devoted my life to making sure that other people find it. I just want to create an awareness of it, Andres, why I do this show, is why I do everything I do. I've devoted my life to it. So you asked me why I accepted the directorship. Well, you know, it's a long journey. It began back when I joined the fellowship. I did a lot of work for the fellowship. I worked for the outreach committee. I went all over the country, all over the world, stood at a booth with other Urantia book readers and talked about it. We talked to people about the Urantia book until we were blue in the face, the big blue book. And then I went to work for Mo Siegel in 1989. And in the meantime, I still had this other life. And then in 1991, I almost died of cancer. And at that point, I gave my life to God. And I said, you know what, Father, whatever agenda I had was a little agenda. And what I want to do most, in fact, I made a very specific prayer to Christ Michael, to our Lord Jesus. I said, Master, there are probably beings all over this universe who would love to have the opportunity I've been given to share this great epical revelation with this world that so desperately needs it. Oh, my gosh. I mean, all we have to do is look around to see it. We don't have to look too far to see how desperately this world needs to know we are not alone. We are beloved children of the infinite creator of all things, unique in infinity, without duplicate in eternity. And I've got this opportunity to share this profoundly beautiful information with my fellows on this planet. And I know there's beings all over the universe that would want to do that. Father, just please let me stay and do that. If you wanted me to stay for 10,000 years, I would. Just stay, let me stay. I'm not afraid to die. I'm not afraid to die at all. But let me stay. Let me stay and share your truth with your children. Your beautiful, liberating, amazing truth. And he let me stay, Andre. And I gave him my life, and from that point on, the things, the places he's taken me and the things we've done are places I would never dream I would go. I've gone all over the world since then.
Wow.
And, you know, I went to work for Mo at Jesusonian Foundation full-time. I was working for him part-time prior to that. I became his director in 1993, the director of Jesusonian Foundation. I held that position until 2006 when the fellowship offered me the directorship. And Jesusonian and the fellowship were sister organizations. We worked side by side. We held each other up through the worst possible times, the worst possible times. And we got through all that. And it felt good. And in 2006, Jesusonian was in a place to go in a different direction, and there was somebody capable to take them that way, and the fellowship asked me if I wanted to do that job for them. So I'm serving a movement of people, of believers in the Urantia book that I dearly, dearly love, and nothing could be more satisfying to me than that.
Wow. So tell us kind of about the fellowship. You know, Gaetan told us about the UAI, what they have to offer. What with the fellowship, I mean, there's, boy, again, what, you know, that's a service organization. I mean, what kind of service opportunities exist for people who are interested in, you know, in finding a community to get involved with?
Well, I think that, you know, ultimately, there's a lot going on in the movement. And there's study groups and there's online chat rooms. And if you just want to talk to somebody, there's ample opportunity for that. You can, hey, you can call me anytime. I have a toll-free number, 877-288-3772. People call me and ask me questions, and sometimes they're out there alone. They just need to talk to somebody. And I, believe me, I know how important that is, and I'm here for anybody that wants to talk. But there's different levels of involvement with anything. And, you know, if you want to study or worship, there's local groups a lot of times, and my heart goes out to folks who don't have a study group nearby. I talk to them a lot. I want to help get study groups going. The fellowship wants to help get study groups going just because it is vitally important for people to have that fellowship with other people who have been touched by this revelation. I mean, it's just vitally important. So that's the first way to get involved, is just to go to satisfy your own need to talk to somebody else about the revelation. But there's another point you come to where you've studied it and you feel like you could teach it. You feel like you could take it to the next level. I think that's why you want to get involved with a larger group. That's the main... The main reason to get involved with a larger group, an organization per se, especially a service organization like the Urantia Book Fellowship, is because you have a passion to share this thing somehow, and you want to be exponentially more successful at that. And whenever you get involved with a group of people, a team, who is dedicated to that same purpose, then you're going to have a lot more success. You're going to have more success at doing what you want to accomplish if you have like-minded people who are working toward the same goals as you, and they want to help you accomplish that too. And in my experience, the fellowship has been absolutely remarkable for me in that way, because I wanted to do that, and they helped me to an extraordinary degree. So I would say, It's not just about what an organization brings to you, but what you bring to it. And the level of commitment and willingness that you have to do something, to get something done. And the fellowship is a group of such people, an organization of people who really want to make a difference. They really want to make a difference. And one thing I think I love the most about the Urantia Book Fellowship is that they're work important, very work important. You know, almost to a fault sometimes, you don't hear us talking about ourselves a lot. You know, what we do, we just quietly do a lot. We do a lot of work. People don't know how much work gets done in the fellowship. You know, let's just take for an example one publication like the Herald. Our editor Linda Buscelli has a whole team of people, and she starts collecting articles, scholarly articles, for the Urantia Book Herald, the Fellowship's Herald magazine, and she'll work on that all year. And then they'll refine them and edit them and collect more, and then they lay them out. They put them. They have them professionally laid out in a glossy covered magazine. That's absolutely beautiful. And we can only afford to put out one a year, but what a beautiful publication! And we send it out to our entire mailing list of 10,000 people. That's a monumental effort. We don't have a subscription or dues or anything. That's a total service to the Brotherhood of Believers. Total service. We ask nothing for that. You know, we put out two newsletters, and this is just our publications committee. We put out two newsletters every year just to inform people what's going on. Right now, and again, we send it out to the entire mailing list. Free of charge. We don't ask anybody. I mean, we'll send out a solicitation for donations, but that's it. You know, you do if you can. You can find whatever you can give. Fine, we're fine with all of that. And remarkably, we carry on year after year after year, 55 years now, and we grow and we provide more and more. And I think our thrust always is, how can we give more? How can we do more? How can we make a bigger difference? Our problem is that we don't have the resources, human or material resources, to make as big a difference as we want to make. Our hearts are big, and we want to make a big difference, and we're restrained by material reality. But we carry on because we feel like the work is that important. So that's our publications, our website. Probably the most scholarly Urantia website on the web. Our webmaster, David Kanner, has set the bar for material. I mean, when truthbook.com wanted to attach scholarly references to our site, we just went to the fellowship site and made links. We made links all day, links to this, links to that, links to the other thing. Truthbook.com linked to the fellowship thousands of times because of the quality of the articles that appear on the fellowship's website.
Wow.
And that is years and years and years of work by David Kanner and his crew, his team, to create a website that is informational and scholarly and educational. And, you know, interestingly enough, the biggest thing being downloaded from the website, hundreds of thousands of audio files. Hundreds of thousands of people are listening to the Urantia Book via our website.
Wow.
And you know, we've been on the cutting edge with these technologies. People like Larry Watkins, David Kanner, John Hay, my dear friend John Hay, who, here's an example, Andre. Here's an example of the kind of thing that fellowship members put out. Back in the 1980s, John decided that he wanted to have an audio version of the book. And so he paid Merritt Horn to record it. And he did it on reel to reel. And then he remastered it on cassette. Huge. I mean, we're talking about 197 audio papers from the Arantia book, audio chapters, remastered 197, and then turned around again in the late 90s and remastered it again digitally. And what do we have now? We have a disc, a single disc, that contains all 197 audio papers of the Urantia book that we can put in every single book that goes out. So not only can people read it, they can listen to it. And this is the 20-year effort of one man who has done nothing but give and give and give.
Wow.
And this is the kind of people that I am honored and blessed to work for and with. I can't tell you, Andre, how blessed I feel. I mean, you know, it inspires me to see the kind of unselfish service I see every single day in the fellowship. I live in constant inspiration of, you know, someone said earlier on the board, hey, I'm lucky enough to go to Robert Burns' study group. I think it was Mark who said that. I'm like, Mark, you are lucky. What an amazing human being that is. You know, so for me, when I look at organizations, I look at the contributions of each individual and what they give in terms of endless conference calls and emails and all the coordination that goes into just one thing, like putting the Herald out, like doing an international book fair. Our international committee in the last 2 years has done two international book fairs. Man, that's huge. They went to Korea and to India the year before that. That's a monumental effort. It's hard for someone to imagine how much effort goes into coordinating all that. Getting books there, getting brochures there, setting up the booth, paying for the booth space, coordinating volunteers, having and doing a meaningful outreach and dissemination. You and I know what's involved in doing this show. So, you know, and those are the kinds of things that I see every day. They come across my desk. In this fellowship, this Urantia Book Fellowship that I'm a part of. So I feel really good about it, Andre. I feel like, you know, we do the best we can with what we have, and we do it year after year after year. And people say to me, well, why should I join the fellowship? Well, you know, if you want to be more effective in your service, then join. If you want to serve the revelation, dissemination, outreach, education, then join.
Okay, I don't mean to. I want to get into some nuts and bolts here. What are some of the? How is this fellowship set up? How is the organization set up? There are study groups to get involved in, and tell. Let's just kind of start from the ground up. Each study group usually is part of what's called a society. Explain to listeners what societies are and what they're about.
Well, again, you know, obviously it starts with basic organization, which is study groups. But study groups are not a part of any organization. Study groups are just grassroots, autonomous groups that come together to study the Urantia book, and we facilitate those in as much as we send people to them that are looking for them. The fellowship publishes a study group directory. We have for years and years and years, since the late 80s, we've published a study group directory simply to facilitate Urantia book readers finding other readers, not only in your area, but when you travel. And you want to visit other Urantia book readers, there's a study group directory. And these folks, you know, they publish their contact information, at least their phone number or their email. they're the true unsung heroes of the Urantia movement. They open their door every Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday night or whatever it is, once a month, twice a month. Whatever it is they do it, they make a commitment and they do it, and they create a social fabric for Urantia book readers. God bless them. And from there, though, you know, it, like I said, if you want to get more involved, then you might talk about starting a society, a Urantia society, which is a group, maybe two or three study groups. A lot of groups get together and have a super study group once a month or something, and eventually they might say, well, you know what, maybe we can take this to another level. Let's create a society. There's certain requirements for that. You know, you have to have a business meeting, and you have to have a president and a treasurer and a secretary and somebody to keep minutes, and you make decisions. And, you know, a lot of Urantia societies become a full-fledged nonprofit, and they do service projects, and they do fundraising, and they serve to another degree. They serve to on a different level of study groups. Study groups are much more social interaction in a very informal, private way in somebody's home or in a church or a bookstore or whatever.
Sure, sure.
But a society is much more formal and much more organized. We follow Robert's Rules of Order. We have meetings. We have, you know, where everybody speaks that wants to speak, and everybody is recognized that wants to speak, so that we can decide to do projects that are more ambitious. And I'll give you an example. Some societies, like the New York Society, took on the Korean translation of the Urantia book because one of their members was married to a Korean woman and speaks fluent Korean, and they took this on, and at the same time, they took on another translation. They translated the book into Russian. That's two translations coming out of one Urantia society, and they're high-quality translations, very high-quality translations. Another Urantia society took on translating the book into Croatian because one of their members was from Croatia.
Was that here in America, or is that in another country?
Both of those societies are here in America.
Wow.
My society, the Rocky Mountain Spiritual Fellowship, which used to be the Rocky Mountain Urantia Society of Denver, we took on outreach. We started doing public outreach in 1982 with the people there. We created a whole methodology for doing public outreach with the Urantia book, using a book, brochures, a booth with brochures and signage and things like that, and really developed that over a period of time where we got really, really good at it.
Now, I want to just point something out here, and this is not taking a side here because this is very controversial, but I'll just point it out. In the one difference between the fellowship and the UAI is the UAI does not do its own translations or publications because they leave that stuff to the foundation. But correct me if I'm wrong, the fellowship published its own book, its own Urantia book. With Uversa Press is the name of their publishing company. And then is Uversa Press, are they the ones that are doing the, is Uversa Press, are the translations being done under the umbrella of Uversa Press?
Translations or?
Yeah, translations. Like you said, you're one of the societies.
No, see, for those societies to do that, here's something that's important to note. Every Urantia society for the Urantia Book Fellowship is truly autonomous. That means they're chartered, and they have their own bylaws and their own constitution, and they can do what they feel moved to do. If they feel moved to do a translation, they can do that. There's no top-down organization that's going to say to them, "You cannot do that. That's politically, you know, incorrect," or I don't know, whatever reason that the top-down might think they shouldn't do that. That's not going to happen in the fellowship. They have the right as an autonomous society to take on whatever project they want to take on as a society. We, if But then you go up to another level again, Andre, and that's a national level. Each one of those societies can send a representative to the Triennial Delegate Assembly, and the Triennial Delegate Assembly then elects the General Council, and the General Council makes decisions for the fellowship as a whole organization, as a national organization. The General Council and a subset of it, the Executive Committee, which is all of the committee chairs and the five officers of the fellowship, 14 people. They have the bulk of the responsibility, the day-to-day outworkings of the fellowship. But if the fellowship were going to officially do a translation, that whole body would have to agree to it. That entire body would have to deliberate that. And I've been on a lot of those kinds of deliberations, and they're very interesting and lively. And they would have to absolutely agree, maybe not unanimously, but a pretty strong majority would have to agree that that needs to be done before that would ever happen. A society, on the other hand, can do that because they truly are autonomous. So
let's see if I get this straight. So you're saying a society can, I guess, I'm not sure I understand the, you're saying a society can fund translations or can you know, without the approval of the fellowship as a whole?
That's correct.
Okay. So now the society, now are they doing their own translations independent of the Urantia Foundation?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's, I understand now. So that,
in those three instances, that was the case. However, the Korean translation that was done by the New York Society, as I understand, is the one that is now officially being used by Urantia Foundation. I've heard that. I can't say
okay.
for sure because I don't speak Korean and I don't read Korean, but that's what I've heard.
Okay. So the societies are sort of the equivalent of what the UAI calls the local associations, but they're even, you know, in this case, they really are quite autonomous. They can choose to work with the foundation or do things separately from the foundation. So that's up to the society.
Absolutely.
Okay. Wow. That's
absolutely. They are truly powerful organizations in their own right. I mean, they can do and coalesce whatever kind of project, you know, within the laws of the land, obviously. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the spirit of the revelation and honoring the revelation, obviously, but they could do just about anything they wanted to do, and if they felt like they could raise the funds and come up with the resources to do it. And the central organization may not like it at all, although that has never happened, really. I mean, we really support our societies. We support them in whatever they want to do. We try to help them, actually. If they want to do outreach, we try to support them in that. If they want to do, you know, if they want to do scholarly study or create a secondary work, we would do whatever we could to support them in that. And we support them in materials, too, as well, with books. I mean, we give all of our societies a deep discount so that they can do the work of dissemination without having to worry so much about resources. So it's a work important kind of situation. And when I say that, I'm talking about the quote from the book about being work important versus self-important. You know what
sure,
I'm talking about,
sure.
Andre?
Sure.
A beautiful quote from the ministering reserves. The angels who work even when unassigned. And I highly recommend this quote. I can find it for you if you like.
Yeah, the one where it says the work is important but the self is not. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. This is advice from an angel, folks, from angels and probably an angel. And it's from paper 48, section 6. And It's advice from the ministering reserves. This is what they teach us. They teach us that we will learn that we increase our burdens and decrease the likelihood of success by taking ourselves too seriously.
Ah,
nothing can take precedence over the work of your status sphere, this world or the next. Very important is the work of preparation for the next higher sphere. But nothing equals the importance of the work of the world in which you are actually living. But though the work is important, the self is not. When you feel important, you lose energy to the wear and tear of ego dignity, so that there is little energy left to do the work. Self-importance, not work importance, exhausts immature creatures. It is the self-element that exhausts, not the effort to achieve. You can do important work if you do not become self-important. You can do several things as easily as one if you leave yourself out. Variety is restful. Monotony is what wears and exhausts. Day after day is alike, just life or the alternative of death. Little angelic wisdom there for you, Andre.
Wow. You know,
that's what I mean.
I got to tell you, but you know what? I got to tell you, that quote, it's so funny because I'm so ambivalent about that quote because I think the part about not taking yourself seriously is so important. That I totally agree with, and we don't want to be pretentious and self-important. I guess where I find that quote a little frustrating, frankly, is that, you know, we all have a need for affirmation and appreciation. And, you know, it is, I have to say, sometimes it can be very taxing to just continue to work and work and not get any appreciation. But one thing I will say about the fellowship, that my experience with it, is that, that you know, the people there are so willing to extend appreciation. I mean, I just see it so, you know, whenever I do something, people are always, you know, they're always giving me probably more compliments than
back. Oh, hi. What happened?
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. I wonder if there's something technical going on at Blog Talk because I don't know what the last thing I was talking about. I was saying that, you know, that quote. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I was saying that quote that you read is I'm sorry if I'm ambivalent about it because on the one hand, I think it's great to not take ourselves too seriously. That part I totally agree with. You know, the self-importance part, that we don't want to be pretentious and self-important. On the other hand, it is nice to be appreciated, I'll admit it. And, you know, if I'm doing a whole bunch of work and not getting appreciated at all, then, you know, that can be frustrating. But one thing I really like about the fellowship is that people are so willing to extend appreciation. I mean, when I've done things, you know, at the fellowship or whatever it is I'm doing, I get, whether it's for my local society or whatever, I get tons of compliments, probably more than I deserve. So it's a great place to be if you feel like you haven't been appreciated. It's the people there are more than happy to encourage us and to show appreciation. So that's
well, and I agree with you. I think that we consciously have to, you know, we realize that we have to make an effort to appreciate one another because we all work very hard. And sometimes we get caught up in the work to the point where we don't stop for a minute and say, hey, bravo, thank you for that. That was a wonderful effort. And, you know, people can go a long way on just a little appreciation. So I don't really think the quote, though, is dealing with that per se as much as it is dealing with ego and craving to, you know, it's almost like when they're saying the work is important, the self is not. I think it's the work of the organization is important. The organization per se is not. It's only important in that it serves the work. You know, I mean, it's like Jesus saying, he among you who will be truly great will be the one to serve the others.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's true greatness. To the degree that you're serviceable, you're doing the work, you are great. You know. Anyway,
right.
That's what I love about the fellowship and... I pray that the fellowship will be around for a long, long time serving the Brotherhood of Believers. And that's what I work toward, making sure that that's going to happen. because
let's talk about, because I want to make sure, because we don't have as much, I don't think, I don't know, how much time do we have left right
now?
But
we're down to 15 minutes.
Okay,
so.
Yeah. Because
we're going to have Diane on.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, I want to make sure we get a few specifics in here. The fellowship has a lot of committees that people can serve on. Can you talk, these are national, you know, on a national level, not just on a local society level. Can you tell people can you tell people about some of those committees and what they do?
Well, we have 9 standing committees, each committee has a very specific purpose. So, you know, for instance, we have the publications committee, and I got into a little bit what the publications committee does. And then we have judicial. Judicial deals with legal issues and ramifications. We've been delightfully without those for the last 7 years. So they're dealing more with issues of constitution and those matters. It's an interesting committee, not as active as some of the others because just by its nature. We have outreach committee, which deals with dissemination around North America, say. We have international committee, which deals with international fellowship and dissemination in the rest of the world. Right now, international committee is working in South America and Africa and India, really focusing on those 3 areas, trying to build up the readership and trying to help create an infrastructure of leaders within those communities so that they can have their own dynamic organization, you know, in their own countries. Obviously, they know best how to serve their own people. We're not going in there trying to pretend like we're going to tell them how to do it. We just want to help them find each other. And so that's what we do. We act more like social directors to bring people together more than anything else and to bring them together around events, outreach events and dissemination events, conferences, educational things like that. That's international committee. We have the Uversa Press Committee, which is the publisher, and that committee takes care of all the publishing aspects. We have the Pipeline of Light, which is, and these are ad hoc committees, by the way, the Pipeline of Light buys translations from your Rancher Foundation and sends them all over the world to third world countries, people who can't afford that, the book. And we seed, Pipeline of Light is trying to seed the world with translation. So in that way, we work hand in hand with Your Rancher Foundation. We buy a lot of books from them. We might be one of their best customers, actually. We have finance committee. Obviously, they raise money for things that we're trying to do, for the work we're trying to do. We have interfaith committee. Interfaith seeks to establish inroads with other faiths, people of other faiths and religions. So they go to interfaith gatherings. Right now, the fellowship is getting ready to send. You know, we're about 10 of us from the fellowship are going to the Parliament of the World's Religions in Australia. It's a huge interfaith event. I think I've mentioned it before on the show. It's happening in Melbourne at the beginning of December this year. Every 5 years, the Parliament takes place since 1993. Before that, it happened once. It was 100 years between the first and the second one, and now they're happening every 5 years. Hallelujah. Wonderful interfaith event. We've talked about interfaith a lot. So the Interfaith Committee is doing very important work in building those bridges of interfaith between Your Rancher Book readers and other religionists. And so that's of course, membership committee. Membership committee takes care of our members, of people, member needs, and people who want to become members at large, and people, societies that want to be formed. And we've chartered a couple of societies in the last couple of years, and there's another one trying to emerge in Florida right now. A society is Arnie Ondas is working on chartering a society in Florida, and he's very dedicated and working very hard. And, you know, it may sound like an easy thing, and all we ask is, you know, for a society that you have 10 people. But, you know, you'd be amazed how hard it is sometimes to find 10 people who are willing to commit to take it to another level. It's not an easy thing. Anyway, that's a bit basic gist, I think, Andre.
Wow.
It's a lot of good work. A lot of good work's going on.
So there are two kinds of committees, it sounds like. Because what people may not realize is, you know, and I don't want to get too bogged down on this, but the fellowship has officers as well that are on the executive committee, and then the other committees report to the executive committee, like the education committee and the outreach. I think there's education committee, and there's some other ones, but some of the committees you're mentioning are not formal like that, right? Like the pipeline of light committee.
No, we call them ad hoc committees. They're not a formal part of our constitution, but they come up. They kind of ebb and flow. With the need of the work that we're doing at the time. So, and some of them are just as permanent as some of our standing committees, what we call our standing committees. But and here are just to give you a quick rundown of the committees we have: judicial, outreach, publications, membership, international, finance, interface, education was the one I left out. Sorry, education. Education. Does conferences, it does the summer seminars, summer study session every summer when we're not doing an international conference, which is a huge monumental undertaking in itself. But then they do wonderful intensive studies that they put in print, study of the Urantia Book and race and gender. We call them the Wrightwood studies,
sure.
The Wrightwood for a while, and then we also have special projects, another committee that kind of is a catch-all for things that don't get done with the other standing committees, and nine standing committees, and then at any given time we could have four or five ad hoc committees. Like right now we have an ad hoc committee called Strategic Planning Committee, and they're trying to help us vision what we want to do and where we want to go. So we're busy, Andre.
Yep.
It's a lot of work.
Yep.
But it's
yep.
good work.
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of partial to the education committee myself because I just went to one of their meetings. And
yeah, you did, didn't
that,
you?
That yeah, was a good I really, really enjoyed it. I really, it's something I really would like to get more involved in. So
We better give our dear friend Diane a chance to speak about the wonderful.
Yeah,
election.
And I want to, before she does that, and because I want to make sure that, well, let's get her on the phone. Why don't we do that first? I don't know if
she's already here. Diane, are
okay.
you here?
I've been there from the beginning.
Okay. Diane, I want to, before you talk, let me explain to you why we're having Diane call in. As you know, we've been doing, this show has been about the two primary organizations, the Urantia Association International and the Fellowship for Readers of the Urantia Book, two primary fraternal organizations that exist to further the spread of the revelation. But Diane is doing something, and one of the things that has been a concern to a lot of readers and has really been a burden on Diane's heart has been the lack of unity in the Urantia movement. There's been a split between these two organizations. At one time, there was one organization called the Urantia Brotherhood, and I'm not even saying that there's anything wrong with having two separate organizations, but we need to make sure that we don't divide over our participation in these organizations, that we can still love one another and get along with each other as readers and put aside our politics. And one of the things Diane is doing, and we did talk about this on the show some time ago, but Diane is putting together something called a Urantia Family Festival this summer in Montreal. Diane, tell us about that and tell us why you decided to do this.
Yes. Hi, everyone. It's so beautiful to be back on the program. And I want to say it was most interesting to be listening to your program today because it is exactly in connection with what I'm going to say. It's called the United Urantia Family Festival. It was, I must say that it was started in 1992 in Montreal where I live. It was a success from the start, just before IC93, if you all remember. And after IC93, I was so in love with the readers that I actually moved out of Montreal. So the project was put on the back burner, and this year, by God's grace and Jesus' guidance, it was in the spring, it was put back on the front burner. And the beauty about the United Urantia family is that it is to unite all readers of the Urantia book from all over the world into a big family, one global family celebration. And as I was listening to you two talk, and I was in silence for all this time, I was humbled by the way God and Jesus work in silence to prepare us sometimes for our calling throughout our lives, and he does it in such a tactful way, in such a grandiose way and quiet way that we don't even realize it. And I realize that being born in a large family from the very youngest age I can remember, I admired my mother, who was such a wonderful hostess. And large family, she got us together, and every weekend we would celebrate, and uncles and aunts and cousins would come over, and the latest in this and the latest in that, we had to find out. We would celebrate until 5, 6 in the morning when we would go to bed at the end, sadly. So the United Urantia family, it's almost like I found my calling. It's to unite everyone every 3 years to come and celebrate our togetherness, our spirit of brotherhood. First of all, we have to do this in a spirit of love, peace, and harmony. And it will be to inform ourselves on the latest developments, projects, translations, programs, visions, anything. I was listening to you talk, Paula, and I was saying, the whole world needs to find out about this. Another great aspect that I so look forward to, this first inaugural event that will be held next July in Montreal from July 1st to the 5th, 2010, at the beautiful university downtown, is that, you know, it's important to know our brothers and sisters from around the world that we may or may not have met. I can't tell you how much I look forward to meet readers that I've never met in my life and that I'm probably going to literally fall in love with, and vice versa, I hope. So the mission of the Urantia family, first of all, Urantia family is a not-for-profit organization that really has a mission and a vision. The mission I've told you, because I believe the vision I was given is that every 3 years it will be, just like after UAI, the association has its triannual meeting, and then the fellowship has its triannual meeting, the family, the Urantia family, will have its triannual meeting, but to celebrate as one global family. And the vision is that also when people will go on the net and at a finger's touch, reach us, urantiafamily.org, it will, with time naturally, given time, it will have chapters of their own country. So with their drop-down list, they will choose their country and they will be able to access Urantia Family Canada, Urantia Family USA, Urantia Family Europe, Urantia Family Australia, China, India, Africa, name it, you know. And in this way, we will grow together, we will harmonize together, and inform each other together, because today, things were said that I'm sure I'm not the only one that didn't even know about such great things that are being done around the world. So this is, to me, the trinity of the association, the fellowship, and the family, and each one has its own mission, vision, and it is complementary to the others. So I hope
I'm
going to
say something. I'm going to say something that, well, no, I guess I shouldn't. I hate to do it. Well, I can say it, but I'll say it a different way than I was going to say it. One thing that doing this show has made me realize, I used to favor one we talked about the UAI and the fellowship. I used to favor one of those organizations over the other. I have to say I no longer do, and especially now that I've experienced both and I've seen changes in both, I'm realizing now that they're both different. I mean, the UAI is a little more low-key, but I'm starting to find that people in the UAI are just as interested in sharing spiritual experiences as the people at the fellowship were. And I'm starting to just see that I really see that both organizations have their place, and I think that one of the things, you know, the Urantia book talks about how we don't really love someone, we can't really love someone until we get to know them and understand them, and that's what I think, and I hope that we've brought just a little bit of understanding to our listeners, and I think that's kind of what you're trying to do at the Urantia Family Festival, is to get people, help people to understand one another, that, you know what, that we're not enemies, we have the same goals, and maybe we're doing things a little differently, but you know what, we don't have to let that be a source of division.
And more, Andre?
Yes.
And much more important than this, of what you said, is that we are all brothers and sisters.
That's right.
We are one global Urantia family that must become one loving Urantia family and one serving Urantia family. So to me, that is to be respectful toward each other and to find the raison d'être, the reason of being for each organization.
Someone on the board just said that, you know, in truth, we are one global family of 6.8 billion brothers and sisters, and this is
yes.
so true, but the point is we don't all know that yet. So those of us...
And in time we will.
And in time we will, and those of us who do know it and appreciate it and believe it and trust it and hold it up with all of our hearts, we need to come together and celebrate the fact.
And, you know, Paula, this and Andre, this morning as I was waking up and praying and meditating, I realized that we have one of the most beautiful examples with your own country, the United States. When you had your constitution and you decided to call yourself the United States of America, you proved to the world what power can come out of that, because you became the strongest, most powerful country in the world. So we're not going to go in details. I'm just saying the bottom line is that. So to become one united Urantia family, and especially with spiritual values, because sometimes with material values, certain wrong directions get taken, you know. But in spiritual vision, to become a united Urantia family, we will become one mighty, powerful family of spiritual souls that help one another, that live in the spirit of brotherhood. And you always need to have a vision first before it becomes a realization. So that's my vision.
Well, you know, darling, the board is just lit up with people saying, we have to have Diane come back. We're out of time. We're actually not streaming right now, but several people said, we need Diane to come back and do a whole show on the Family Festival. Isn't that
great? That would be great. Yes. Send them my love.
I can do a whole show just on the Family Festival because they love so much this concept.
Send them all my love until we meet in person.
Okay, darling. And thanks so much for coming on for the last 10 minutes. I'm sorry we didn't give you more time.
Oh, that's totally fine. Thank you.
Well,
Thank you.
How do listeners know? You mean to let the listeners know how to find out about the Urantia Family Festival? How if they want to sign up or you know and get a, you know, make sure that they attend. I mean, how do they do all that?
Great question, Andre. I have spoken to Linda Buscelli that Paula mentioned before. She said to me that very soon the Mighty Messenger, the Herald, will come out with an ad that we have made, a beautiful flyer. It's going to 10 or 12,000 readers in 89 countries, so they will automatically, as one global family, they will all be automatically informed. I have spoken with Gaetan and Nathan as well, the president of UAC, Urantia Association of Canada. They are most delighted to be informed of the event, and they will inform their readers as well. I have someone that came up and has thousands of names of contacts that will be informed as well. So there's going to be many people around the world. Most people around the world will know about it, and then they will tell their friends, and then they will be able to access from the ad. They will have the link on the ad, on the internet ad, to reach the website. And on the web, you will have the Reg Online button that you can, and we need everyone's support. All we're asking is a $100 deposit to assure a place to the event, because we do have a limited amount of seats, like about 400 or something at the university. So whoever sends their deposit, we will have the proof that it is an event that people love, that they want. We can't wait to meet everyone, and all this can be done on the internet within a few days.
Oh, so, okay, let me see if I get this. So you're saying only 400 people can show up?
Not only 400, but so far we have a limited capacity of 400. If there's more people that come, then we will go to other hotels or whatever. But I'm saying
university
residences. But the beauty is that we're
talking about... You're talking about dorm, a space, sleeping space at the university.
Residences.
Okay. Yeah, yes. I hope we can get a lot of... I'd love to see the days when back in 1990 at Snowmass there was 1,100 people at the conference. I'd love to see days like that. I would love to see this be one of the biggest gatherings.
Yes,
that would just be wonderful.
Yes, so, absolutely. It will be wonderful. It will be incredible. I can't wait to put all my hostess talent that I learned from my mother at work and to see smiles and love and hugs and everyone goes back in their country and spreads the good news and we all grow together at the same level so we know what's happening in events and projects. And so we don't say hearsay. We say, I've been there, done it, heard it, I know, and I can tell you.
Are we? I think we're just about out of time, right, Paula?
We are out of time. We have been for 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, for those of you who will download the show, you can hear all the rest of this. So,
want Diane to come back and do a whole show on your Rancho Family Festival.
Stage. Absolutely.
When you get more details nailed down and stuff, Diane, that'll probably be the perfect time. Because then we'll start promoting it pretty heavily.
Great.
Yeah.
It will be my pleasure.
I'm feeling the first of the year, you know, sometime maybe around January. That would be a great time to really
Before Christmas if you can, a beautiful Christmas gift to prepare
as a family.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. All right. Well,
thank you for having me.
We are out of time, but we're out of time, but we're never out of enthusiasm. This is the Cosmic Citizen, and by the way, I don't know if you know, since you're so into etymology, Diane, I should tell you, you probably know this. I think that the word enthusiasm, it comes from the word entheos, which means to be filled with God. Isn't that a great?
Yes.
Isn't that just a great word? I just love that word. So
yes.
Anyway,
a smile on my face.
I'm sorry.
I said it brings a huge smile on my face.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so in enthusiasm, we will part ways here for the week. Next week, we're going to be talking about a movement called the Emergent Church, which is an interesting movement going on in the Christian church. We're going to be, our guest is going to be a lady named Phyllis Tickle, who wrote a book about that subject. I don't recall the title offhand, but Crystalline, our dear friend, has put all that together. So we will be talking about that next week, and thank you again for being with us this fine morning. God bless everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Love you both.
All right.
Bless.
Bye.
Ciao for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet, the letter X, net.com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.